mind, and it's wild to think that, yes, Advent is upon us. I'm the last guy in our cul-de-sac to get anything done on our Christmas lights, so I wish there were some rules about when you can start singing, when you can start saying Merry Christmas, and when you get to decorate, okay? It's just unfair, those guys who get on it like the afternoon of Thanksgiving, so that's just wrong. I just think that's wrong. And the chance that I don't have a chance to say hi to you, I will not be with you on Christmas. So Merry Christmas to everyone. Hope that you have just a wonderful time celebrating each day, just God's fulfilled promise to us. Our kids are crazy busy. They don't get done with school till December 21st. Our daughter, who's in college, comes back on the 20th. And then we're going to try to get out of town for a couple of days, but trying to just make everybody stop and have some hard rules about the phone. And we put them down and we don't look at them and we enjoy each other. So I hope these next few weeks is just a great time for you all as we move towards Christmas. One of the things that I was really afraid of as a kid growing up was quicksand. I don't know. Was anybody afraid of quicksand growing up? Thank you. I can see those hands. It just seemed to me that every TV show that I watched, there's always an episode of quicksand, you know? It's like even on Gilligan's Island, Skipper gets stuck in quicksand, you know? And Wild Wild West, James West gets stuck in quicksand somehow, you know? Star Trek, Captain Kirk, he's going to get stuck in quicksand, right? Was there a Brady Bunch episode with Greg in quicksand? I don't remember. It must have been. Tarzan. There's just quicksand. It's just, and we had this desert yard growing up, and I remember one time my folks bought in a big truckload of dirt and sand because they had this idea that they're going to build a fountain someday, which never really happened. But when that sand came, I was so afraid of this sand because if I stand in it, I could just be swallowed up by quicksand, you know? It was just this fear that I had. So what was interesting is I did a little bit of research about quicksand because I started to think, is this really a thing, right? So I find out that it is a thing. There really is stuff called quicksand. And as I studied it, for the most part, I found that it's kind of obvious when you get into it. It's kind of like you see a big kind of wet spot in the desert because there's water-soaked sand that kind of draws you down because the sand is soft. And it's like everybody who started talking about it was saying, like, if you stand here for a long period of time, it will soak you down. And they're just showing you how to do this, like Bear Grylls. If anyone knows Bear Grylls, he's the adventure guy. He not only stands in it, he starts moving his feet back and forth, you know, trying to sink himself in here to show you how to get out of it. I'm like, dude, just get out of it. Don't stand there. So it does exist, but it's not as tricky as maybe we thought. Kind of avoid it at all costs. It's a good thing to avoid quicksand. But what scared me about it as a kid is it just looked so dangerous because it was so deceptive, right? All of a sudden you're standing there, someone walks into a spot, and they get snapped up instantly. Even in The Princess Bride, Wesley has to dive into the lightning sand. I don't know how that works, but he dives into it and then comes up and rescues Buttercup. But the idea for me is just so deceptive and so dangerous. And what's interesting in the passage that we're going to look at is that Jesus wants us to be aware of something that's just as dangerous and just as deceptive. Because if we're not, it's really, really going to hurt us. And we're Luke chapter 12, if you have your Bibles with you. And we want to finish out our session that we've been doing on parables, which has been a great series to just understand how Jesus uses story and parable to make his teaching points, to illustrate ideas, and to really capture his audience. And this is the last one we'll be looking at. It's Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21. Let me read that for us. It says that someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter over you?" Then he said to them, "Be aware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, This very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasures for himself and is not rich towards God. What's interesting about this parable is how it starts, is it starts out of a very natural conversation. You've got people who are trying to figure out inheritance laws and rules. The Old Testament said very clearly what happens when someone dies. There's a progression of how that takes place. I won't go that much into detail of it. But these guys are fighting over what this is supposed to look like for them. It's a very common thing, and that happens. You got to sort all these details. And what was going on is Jesus is trying to get pulled in, or they're wanting to pull him in to settle something. He's like, listen, this is not my area of responsibility. This is not, I'm going to get caught up into this. And what's interesting to me on this, about a side note, is there's times in my life where I think Jesus would do everything anyone asked of him. And here you see a situation where he has these boundaries to say, this is what, I don't do this. This is not what I'm here for. And it's in this context where these guys are fighting that Jesus is trying to tell the rest of us and the audience he's with, his disciples, about how to be aware of what's going on. Because you see what's happening with this greed that they're dealing with. Look what it's doing to the relationship between these brothers. And Jesus uses this as an occasion to tell us something. And the big idea he wants us to be aware of, he says, is be aware of greed. There's three things I want us to kind of peel back a little bit as we think about this idea of why is it that he wants us to be so careful with the idea of greed. And then I want us to kind of come back and look at two things that he's told us that will help us when we think about dealing with greed and struggling with it. So this idea of greed is really quite obvious. It's an intense and selfish desire to have more. It can be more of what you already have, or it could be more of what other people have. There's an idea of covetousness there also. But the big idea is that I just want more. I've got to have one more. Just one more. Just 10 more. Just whatever it is. It's this drive and this desire, and it's all about us. And it's dangerous for three reasons. Well, first of all, I want to kind of sidetrack here a second, because as I was thinking about this, it reminded me of a movie that came out back in 1987 called Wall Street. I don't know if anyone ever saw that, but it starred Michael Douglas. And the big idea was trying to give this picture of just how greedy Wall Street is. And in the movie, the character Gordon Gekko, played by Michael Douglas, gives this rousing speech at this annual conference for a business about why greed is so good. And I'm just going to read it. He says, "The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for the lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind. And greed, you mark my words, will not only save this company, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA." And what was interesting in the movie is that the movie was trying to say that what most Americans already believe is that greed is a wonderful thing. And yet Jesus says this is something to be aware of. And he says it's dangerous for three reasons. The first reason is the idea that greed is deceptive. It's deceptive. It's really hard to detect. The word that he uses here, beware, what's interesting about the word is not just to see, but it's to see with your mind. It's to perceive spiritually what's going on. And he says it in a voice or a mood that says it's in a command. It's like, I want you to do this. This is an important thing. It's a command. And don't just pass over this thing. This is a very real deal. So perceive what is happening. Spiritually perceive with an inward sense of spiritual reception and perception. There's times when I get caught up in an argument with my wife when I am kind of fighting, and at the point I'm trying to think of just about winning, that God kind of helps me realize this is not about winning. This is not about making your point. This is not about getting through it. What's going on here is that Satan is trying to establish a stronghold in your marriage. You got to see what's going on here beyond what's right in front of you. And what Jesus is saying here is that I want you to see what this is. It's hard to detect because it's something so common in every human heart. So I want you to see and perceive what's going on. I was listening to a sermon by Tim Keller, who's a pastor in New York City, and he was talking on this subject about greed. He said one of the things that's really interesting for him as a pastor is that all the years that he's been a pastor, he can't remember one person coming into his office to say to him, "Pastor, I really have a problem with greed. Will you help me?" They've come in with all other kinds of problems. But no one has ever come to him and said, I'm having a problem with greed. Another businessman that I heard talk on the same topic said that what's interesting about greed is that in his church, he's very involved with his church, knows these men that would really love him, support him, challenge him. They would challenge him if he had a drinking problem. They would challenge him if he had a problem with drugs. They would challenge him if he wasn't doing well in his marriage. But no one's going to challenge him if he's doing well in business. Matter of fact, if he talks about a business success, no one's going to caution him about it. And what Jesus is saying is that this is something that's so hard to detect because it's so common to all of us. And we need to see with perception what's really going on here. It also takes very different forms. He says every form of greed. What's interesting about this idea, the word that's used here, is it's talking about, hey, get the big picture, but you get the big picture by looking at all the individual parts. In other words, be very thorough in how you think of this topic called greed, because there's a lot of different ways to experience it. You know, if you think of someone who has a nut allergy, I'm willing to bet they don't just say, oh, I've got a nut allergy. They know exactly what kind of nuts trigger them, because they've been tested on all the different types and varieties of nuts to know that these are the ones I have to stay away from. Me, I don't have an allergy, but I have an addiction to pistachios. I have to stay away from pistachios because I will eat the whole bag, which is not just greed, but it's a little OCD mixed in there, so I've got some real problems. But the idea that Jesus is saying is that there's all different kinds and forms of greed. So don't just be aware of some broad sense, but be really tuned in to all the different ways that it can affect us. We can be greedy about all kinds of things, can't we? Have a little bit more money. That would be nice. Maybe a little more approval from who we're trying to get approval from. Maybe it's family members. Maybe it's bosses. Maybe it's neighbors. Maybe it's whoever. More time. Who wouldn't like to have just more time to themselves and do kind of their own thing on their own schedule? It's interesting what's going on with me right now with my wife and my daughter is that when Janet calls and talks to our daughter on the phone, she's down at college, I start to get jealous and greedy, like, I want some time. Or when Lauren calls and talks to me, Janet's like, hey, can you put it on speaker? I'm like, no, this is my time. I want to talk to her. We can get greedy about all kinds of little things, about more possessions, about more attention. Maybe more friendships, more power. It's so interesting when you look at the life of Solomon in the Old Testament. The guy only had a couple of wives, but then he also had 700 to 1,000 concubines. It's like, dude, what are you doing here? He's like collecting things. It's the same ugly, damaging thing about pornography. It's just one more thing. It's one more picture, one more picture. And the thing is, Jesus says there's all kinds of greed that we want and need to be aware of. He's warning us. And not only is it that it's hard to detect and there's different forms, but it disguises itself. This is why greed is so deceptive. It disguises itself as success. Because when you get more of that stuff or more of that thing, you feel like I'm in charge, I'm in control, I got what I want, right? This is good because of I have all this stuff. And we start to believe that just by getting more things, that I am successful. Why? Because I've gotten more. What we don't realize is that it disguises itself that way. You're just going to want more and more and more. It doesn't satisfy. It's a disguise for what we really need. When I was a kid growing up, one of the TV shows I watched was Wild Wild West with Robert Conrad and Ross Martin. And it was a show where one guy was like the really studly CIA type guy set in the 1800s. And he could fight anything and carried all kinds of weapons on him and stuff. And the other guy was kind of the sidekick, Artemis Gordon. And Artemis was a guy who every episode would always put on these disguises. And what was crazy is that he'd show up in his disguise and you go, oh, that's Artemis. You knew right away it was him. You're not fooling anybody, right? So I was so enamored by this, I said, I've got to get my own disguise kit going. So I learned how to make some disguises, and where I started was just basic. I just need some more hair. I'm like seventh grade, right? So I made these fake sideburns and fake mustaches and stuff. Went for that 70s long sideburns with the big mustache thing. And there's actually a picture of me at our parents' 25th anniversary wearing all my disguises. And guess what? I look exactly like me. But with some really cruddy sideburns and a stupid mustache. And what's crazy is that Jesus is saying it's trying to disguise itself, but it's not success. It's not what you really need. Man, look what happens to the fool. He says, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. In other words, soul, you have security. You don't have to worry. You've arrived. You don't need anything. You don't even need God. See, it's this disguise that you really have what you need, but we don't. Because Jesus goes on and says, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. Think about that phrase. That even when you think you have an abundance, Jesus is saying, that's not it. That's not life. That's not where life is found. It's not in your stuff and how much you have. So even though you might think you're successful because of what greed has brought to you, it's a disguise. It's not success. Because we're made for more than that. It's like kind of empty calories, you know? You can feel full on empty calories, but do they do anything for you? No. You know? It's like when I watch my kids mow through 6 donuts at a time, or, you know, they eat 4 hot dogs, or they just kind of, teenagers just plow through food. It's that they're hungry again. It's just they're constantly hungry. And greed is a disguise to fill our souls with something that never will satisfy us. And Jesus is warning us to not be caught up into that. It does not bring success. Even if we have a lot of stuff, that's not where life is found. And I think most of us understand this. So we understand it in tragedy. You know, when you think of all the people in Paradise, California that have lost their homes to these fires, as tragic as that is, as difficult as that is, what are they glad? They're glad they came through with their life. They're glad that they came through with the lives of their family. Yeah. My stuff is burnt, but I'm still here. Or this happens when we lose our loved ones. When we realize how much they mean to us and how much we love them, we realize life is bigger than our stuff. But greed has a way to just pull us away from that, to pull us away from reality. Say, no, 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 no. What's most important is that I get my stuff. I get my things. And I try to build this world to tell myself I'm successful. I'm okay. So we've got to guard against the deception of greed. There's a second reason why greed is dangerous, and that is because it's selfish. It is all about us. It's interesting when you think about all the virtues of the Christian life and what the Christian life means, greed is the absolute antithesis or opposite of what the Christian life is about, isn't it? See, greed is all about me getting more for me. And Jesus said, I have come to give my life as a ransom for others. The whole theme of my life needs to be, how is it that I can pour out my life and give my life away to other people? And greed says, no, 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 no. This is all about getting everything you can. And that's why it's so opposite. He says, be aware of this. Because this has nothing to do with what I am and what my mission is all about. It's the opposite. Jesus said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Paul reminded the Philippians church in chapter 2, he said, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. He goes on to say, have this attitude in you that was in Christ Jesus, who although he could have clung on to the glory in heaven and been greedy about the glory in heaven, he says, no, I'm going to give all that up so I can come to earth to pursue people who want nothing to do with me. It was all about him giving his life away, which is the exact opposite of what greed is. You know, as we prepare our hearts for Christmas, these next few weeks, that's what took place, is that I'm leaving heaven to come to a people that want nothing to do for me. Just the very beginning of his existence is all about giving away instead of getting for himself. And what's interesting about getting more is look what the rich young fool talks about. He talks about my crops and my gain. He wants to build bigger barns and tear down other ones. Why? So he has more room for stuff. There's no inheritance. There's no plan. It's never been like, hey, I'm trying to build this up for somebody else even. It's like, this is all about me. I don't even have an inheritance plan because this is all mine. And even what he tells himself, he says, eat, drink, and be merry. You know, the common phrase would be, treat yourself. You know, you just got to treat yourself. And what's interesting about these words is their commands. He's commanding himself to just enjoy this. The word merry is this idea that's not just be happy, but it's this idea that you deserve this. You've been a victor. This has this kind of an inner sense of triumph. Go treat yourself because look at all the great things you've done for yourself. He's just commanding himself. And even Jesus' summary of this guy's life is that he stores up treasures for himself. And Jesus said, this is dangerous when it's all about you. because that's not what I'm about. And if you're a follower of me, that's not what you should be about either. And what's crazy about when you start to think about how inward greed becomes, it's just even as delusional. Okay? In other words, we entertain thoughts that really aren't, they don't really square with reality. What's interesting in this phrase, in this parable, when it says that he reasons to himself, when you understand kind of the idea of the word that's being used here, that it means properly to go back and forth when evaluating something. Okay? You're going back and forth, all right? But this back and forth leads to a general sense of confusion. In other words, it's a back and forth that doesn't really resolve anything. And the term actually implies that there's one confused mind interacting with other confused minds, each further reinforcing the original confusion. So here this guy is in a debate with himself about what should I do? And all it's going to lead him to is destructive stuff. There's no outside objective source that's informing him about what to do, because greed is just irrational. I remember one time I was in Florida, and I was with a friend of mine. We were attending some kind of conference, and he asked me if I'd bought a lotto ticket. And I said, no. He says, well, don't you know that the lotto in Florida right now is like $100 million? And I'm like going, okay, well, I don't really buy lotto tickets. I said, you know, if you do, that's fine. I don't. And he says, well, I'm trusting God, and if God wants to bless me with $100 million, and you know, that's fine. I was like, oh, okay. So I remember thinking, I don't know if you ever thought this way, like, what if I won the lotto? Do you ever do that? Kind of play it out? How many of you are going to automatically give a bunch of money to God? Raise your hands, right? I mean, we all are, aren't we? Oh, of course. Lord, if I get that $100 million, I'm going to give you a lot. Well, of course, Lord, you know they're going to take 50% of it, so now I'm down to $50 million, okay? And let's make sure my retirement's taken care of, because you'd want me to be a good steward, right, and take care of myself. Let's make sure that all my children are okay. That, you know, let's make sure they go to college. Well, when you think about it, they probably need more than college. It might be good for them to have a good down payment on a home, okay? And, of course, we want them to have all good cars. Probably wouldn't be a bad idea if all my kids had, like, some killer retirement account themselves started, right? And you just start to rationalize, don't you? You just go down the list of all the ways. And it's easy for me to start rationalizing and thinking that, oh, yeah, this is the right thing to do. Why? Because I'm stuck in my head. There isn't any sense of outside source of even seeking God. What should I do with what you've given me? And he's stuck in his head, rationalizing with himself. And that's the crazy thing about greed. It just gets all stuck in here and just keeps spinning. And it's all spinning about ourselves. That's why we need to be careful about it. So it's not only just that it's deceptive, he's telling us to be aware. It's not that it's just also that it's selfish. But lastly, it's the idea that greed is temporal. Greed is all about right now. It's about what I can get right now. Not about the future, not about what I need ultimately, but what I can get right now. And this is what's so interesting about the rebuke that this rich fool gets. What's interesting about the way it's just kind of laid out, it's what's called a vocative voice. In other words, this is a direct address from God to this person. It's a very dramatic. It just kind of hits the reader and the listener to say, whoa, whoa, whoa. You mean God would actually talk to somebody, like face to face, like men and women talk to each other? Yes, he will. And what God says to this person is, you fool. This very night, your soul is required of you. Now, who will gain or get what you've prepared? You know, this idea is that this guy had totally lost track of the idea that there is a God, that I will meet him someday, that God will make an account of my life, that I will need to say to him what I've done with all the things that he's given me. And even God's phrase, the idea that who's going to take this? It's like, buddy, you can't take this with you. This isn't coming with you, so who's going to get this? And the idea of this, what was really hard for me to read about was just this idea of what it means to be a fool. Let me just read a couple of descriptions. It's a fool is someone without inner perspective as it regulates behavior. In other words, they just kind of don't really kind of connect what they're thinking and what life is all about with how they actually live. There's a disconnect in that. Where they lack the overall picture or perspective that's needed to act prudently. In other words, I'm not acting the way I should. Why? Because I haven't really thought it through. I'm not being careful about that. Or lastly, it's even a willful ignorance in understanding. It's like we willfully don't understand why this leads to that. It's like, I don't want to stop and think through, well, if I do this, it'll really lead to that. I just don't want to go there. I want to be in denial. And every one of those descriptions I read are all true of me. I can be so foolish about not understanding the big picture and what this is all ultimately about. And this guy didn't even come to God for any help at all. At least I'm trying to say, Lord, help me. I'm a fool. I need you. This guy had nothing to do with God. God was way outside of the picture. He didn't understand that ultimate reality means there is a God. He's blessed us. He wants us to be stewards. And we're going to meet him someday. And this guy was so focused on the here and now and the temporal, he didn't get it. And it says that his life was required of him. In other words, God has a time and place for all of us where we're going to meet him. And that's a very sober thing. We've been through that a lot this last year. But it's real. And Jesus is saying, I want you to remember that. Because the fool didn't. He was stuck right here and right now and didn't get past that. Well, greed is dangerous because it's deceptive. It's also that it's so selfish and it's so temporal. And that's why Jesus is telling us to be aware of it, to perceive what is really happening, what is really going on in the world around you and how you're interacting with it. But there's two things that he says that helps us to say, how is it that we don't get stuck in this? How is it that we don't get so caught up in this greed? Don't just tell us to play defense and be unaware and be even concerned, afraid, anxious. He says, no, that's not the plan. There's an offensive plan as well. And there's two things he says. The first thing he says is to be on your guard. When he says be aware of every, he says be aware and be on your guard for every form of greed. The first idea, they're both commands. The first one is, hey, open your eyes and understand what's really happening here. Okay? The second one is take an active vigilance against what's going on. In other words, actively engage your mind and your heart. And the way this word is shaped, it's about ourselves. It's about taking care and personally being involved in protecting yourself from this. The word is really kind of interesting because it kind of connotes this idea of a military guard, this idea of an unbroken vigilance as a military guard, where they're interested, involved in protecting something. And Jesus says, I want you to actively be involved in protecting yourself from this. In other words, wake up. Wake up. Be aware. Check in. Fight against these things. It's the same word that's used even as we approach the Christmas story that was talking about the shepherds. The shepherds who were out there watching their flocks. They wanted to make sure that nothing bad happened to the flocks. Jesus is saying, make sure nothing bad happens to you when it comes to this idea of greed. Yeah, we're simple in a lot of ways, aren't we? Another thing so interesting is if you look back on the parable of the soil, remember the third soil where it's planted, it's growing, and it's doing okay, but there's two things that choke it out. Do you remember? It's the cares of this life and the deceitfulness of riches. And that's why Jesus is saying, you've got to watch yourself. You've got to guard yourself. And this is where we walk moment by moment with God and say, God, how am I doing here? Search me. Know me. This gentleman that I was referring to, this businessman, one of the things that was really interesting is he was, maybe I didn't tell the whole story, he was a businessman who did really well throughout his life. His mom and dad owned this construction company, and we went off to college. He became a Christian in high school, went off to college, and really got involved in the scriptures, really wanted to study them. And the thing that he came to grips with after about a 1 or 2 year study about money, he's an engineer, was being very precise about it. What he really walked away from the idea of money is that, first of all, God owns everything, has given me everything, and wants me to steward it. And the second thing is that money can really, really hurt me. He talked about some passages like that one, that deceitfulness of riches can rob me from a productive Christian life. He talked about in Timothy how Paul said that many have been pierced with this intense desire for things that they've wandered away from the faith. And he said, that really shaped me as a young man, as a businessman. And I did not want that to happen to me. And as I started my business, I made sure that my business partner, who's his brother, knew that our business belongs to God. The other thing that they did, which was crazy, is they said, we're going to set a salary cap for ourselves. This is how much money we're going to make. And regardless of how well the business does, this wasn't a percentage, this was an amount. No matter how big the business gets, this is where we're going to live. And we're going to talk to each other and hold each other accountable about how you're spending money. How you doing? We're not going to give each other raises as we get more money. We're going to stay right here. And what happened was that God blessed this business. The first year they were able to give about $50,000 away in their business. Next year they gave about $150,000 away. And as their business grew, they got to be able to spend give away $1 million a year for their business. As their business kept growing, one of their salespeople came together, and they were part of this whole idea that God owns this business, and said, "What do we give $1 million a month away?" And they're all like, "What? That's crazy. Why would we do that?" "Oh yeah, it's God's business." So they started giving $1 million a month away. And the thing was, is he built into this system this awareness that I've got to watch myself. That if I just reason with myself, I'm going to go in the wrong direction. I need outside help. I need accountability from other brothers. I need accountability to the Lord. And that's why Jesus is saying to guard ourselves. What form of greed is sneaking up on you? Which one's nipping at your heels? Which one do you go back to quite a bit that if I just had a little more of, then everything would be okay? Now, some of that is need that we have to sort through. I get that. But at the same time, some of it is, no, this is not about what I need. This is about what I want to get. Because if I get this, then I will be successful. I'll be loved. I'll be approved. I'll be whatever. So what's sneaking up on you? What's trying to have a disguise? What's wearing a bad mustache and you're just not seeing it? Because Jesus says we need to be vigilant in watching about this. The second thing that he tells us that will help us is to be rich towards God. To be rich towards God. Wouldn't it be interesting? I'm sure some of us in this room have every once in a while checked the retirement savings to see how we're doing, and you do the math and you go, oh man, I need to make X, Y, and Z percentage of interest or I'm sunk, you know, and then you play all the games. And can you imagine if you could look at your heavenly retirement? Could you imagine what that would look like to say, wow, how am I doing? What kind of treasures in heaven am I getting? I think it might be kind of embarrassing for me, honestly. But it's an interesting concept. But Jesus is saying, be rich towards God. Look what he said in Matthew 6. He said, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. Jesus said the focus of our life should be about God, not about stuff. Should be about his kingdom, not about stuff. I was just thinking during this sermon, I just thought, what would it be like if we could have a couple minutes with Dave and with Emily and with Susan and with Jackie and with others to say, hey, give me some perspective on money. Give me perspective on stuff. Because that's where we're all going, right? And Jesus is saying, I want to remind you, that's the end game, that's the big game. Be rich towards God, not just toward yourself. Be rich towards him. Well, what does that look like? It just means remembering that we have this unquenchable desire for approval and love. We all do. We're made in his image and we're fallen. And even though we know Christ, we're not there yet. So we still struggle with wanting and needing more. Of using our stuff to get approval, to feel good about ourselves. But we've got to realize the only way that's going to be quenched is by God. That we're pursuing him. We're walking with him. Because he is what we really need, not more stuff. Well, Augustine said that you have made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it finds its rest in you. And Jesus is saying, be rich towards God. Here's some things. Develop your relationship with God, not with stuff. Here's some ideas that I'm working on. I want to encourage all of us here. Is continue to know the scriptures. That's how we get to know God. If you're not involved in reading the Bible, let me strongly encourage you to get involved with that. You can't learn how to trust him and grow and get his perspective if you don't know his word. I started something yesterday. I did it last year that I'm calling it the Luke Challenge. And if you don't have a Bible reading program, I'll throw it out to you since it's only day two. But in the book of Luke, there's 24.
How are you doing,
Benny? Yeah, day two. Yeah, day two. Check with me on day 10 or day four. Yeah. So I started great. But there's 24 chapters in the book of Luke. And if you read one a day, that leads you right up to the day before Christmas. And it's just this nice reflection about the life of Christ before we celebrate his birth. And it's also, if you're not that familiar with the Bible, it's the most complete account of the Christmas story that we see in Charlie Brown and other kind of places. So if you're not familiar, the Bible confirms the Charlie Brown story. So, but if you're not familiar with the life of Jesus, let me just encourage you to do that. It's chapter a day. Starts, the first few are a little long, a little heavy. But are you in a reading program? Are you a way of trying to get more of an understanding of this God you love and follow from reading the scriptures? By doing that, we're going to be more rich towards him. Another way would be by just praying. How you doing in talking to him? How's your prayer life? Does it get beyond thanks for the food? Does it get beyond, can you get me a parking space close? I mean, how is it? I'm not asking that to put you under the pile. I've got a lot of ways to grow. But are you seeing that as a way for you to really connect with God, to really pour out your heart with what's on your mind, with what's on your heart, what you feel, what you're scared about, what you're happy about? Are you talking to him? Are you cultivating that relationship through the day? Are there others that you're praying for? Are you going to the throne of grace, praying for people that are sick, people that are lost? Are you pursuing the heart of God that way? And that's what prayer does. It helps us talk to God. It helps us understand that's what life is all about. And it puts us in a place where he can convict us and lead us and guide us and get us out of our heads. Jesus says being rich towards God is going to help us in this area. Another way is by living by faith. How do you live by faith? Is there anything that you have to trust God for? What do you have to trust God for? What are you conscious of saying, man, if God doesn't come through, this is not going to work? Or is this, no, I can do this. I've done it before. Or even if you're confident in something, are you taking that to the Lord and say, Lord, thank you for this. I pray you give me the strength to keep doing this another day. In other words, there's a humility about our lives. Amen. That says, I need your help. Even if this is something I'm good at, you've blessed me here. Help me sustain that. Help me keep going in this area and demonstrating that. Lastly is by investing in people. Because people are what God's kingdom is all about. It's him, it's his word, and it's people. And instead of investing in ourselves and more stuff for us, how is it that we invest in the lives of other people? Who are other believers that God wants you to encourage, to teach, to come alongside? How can you encourage somebody? I remember when I was a college kid, I went to this school. This church. When I was in college, I went to this church. And I think I might have shared this story before with you. But there was a retired guy by the name of John Pavelda. And this is in the 80s. And John wore a three-piece suit all the time and one of these big monster knotted silk ties. And he had a toupee and it was a little bit off, a little bit kind of, you know, kind of need to wiggle a little bit, kind of pull it down in some spots, you know. But you know, John looked good with it. You know, I always kind of wondered, you know, everybody knows you're wearing a rug, don't you? You know, which is okay. It's totally okay. But as a young man, I was just like kind of stuck on those things. But the thing that would happen is every time I'd walk through the door, John would make it a point to find me, to grab my hand and shake my hand. And not just shake my hand, he would pull me into this big bear hug and say something like, it is so good to see young people like you in church. Huh. And I tell you, it was amazing the love of Christ that radiated through that hug to this young guy. I mean, I get to church, it's like, I don't care what they're preaching on. Where's John? I want to get that hug. I was greedy for my hug kind of thing. It is amazing the young people that will show up here or show up anywhere in your life. How do you encourage them? How do you take an interest in them? How do you say, how you doing? What's going on? How can I pray for you? Because by investing in people, God becomes real to them. He becomes real to us. So invest. Invest in people. Find out how they're doing with the Lord. Encourage them. Pray for them. Another way is just those discussions that you have with non-believers. I don't know who's on your list, who you're praying for that doesn't know the Lord. Are you trusting him to have some of those conversations? I took a step I haven't done before. And yesterday when I started this Luke Challenge thing, which I think I'll get past 2 days. I hope so. But I thought of four guys that I know that don't really know where they are spiritually. And I know one guy's been to church and stuff. Another guy's a strong Catholic guy. But I texted these guys and said, hey, I'm starting this thing. I'm just going to throw it out if you're not really that familiar with the Bible. would love to challenge you to do this and give you a chance to learn more about the life of Christ. And so I typed this all out, and it's like it comes to hit the send button, you know? And I'm like really nervous to hit the send button. Because one guy in particular, I've known for a long time, and he knows I'm a believer. And we've kind of loosely gotten there. He's gone to church with our family a couple of times, but I haven't kind of had the follow-up conversation. And I've known that if I hit the button, things are going to change maybe. And just a step of faith is say, God, I want to learn how to involve other people. So I don't know if God's putting someone on your heart, even just to pray for them about the lost and pray that you can have a conversation. What Jesus is saying is that when we are focused on God, when we're focused on his kingdom, it's harder to stay focused on ourselves. It's harder to be greedy that way. It's something that's dangerous that's lurking in all of us. We need to assume we're greedy. Don't just look at the next person and say, no, they're greedy. I know what they drive. They're greedy people. No, no, no. It starts with us to be aware of that and to walk with God and ask for his help. Let me pray for us. Father, I'm very thankful that you're aware of how frail we are. You are aware of how messed up our hearts are, that our natural inclination is towards ourself to get more stuff. You know that we're motivated by a deep sense of fear that if we don't get enough stuff, we're not going to survive. We're not going to be okay. And that is so untrue. So I pray that you would help all of us to just wake up to that reality that you're the only one who can fulfill all of our needs, not our stuff, not our daydreams about our stuff, but you. Father, I pray for anyone in this room here who hasn't thought carefully about the idea that they will meet God one day, that they will meet you one day. Will you quicken their hearts to do business with you? To talk to you about how they've lived, to talk to you about how they've treated your son. Do they believe in him as the one who's died for them or not? Or do they just treat him as some person in history? So I pray you would quicken their hearts to do business with you, to know that when they died, they would spend eternity with you because Christ died for their sins. Father, as we move towards Christmas, I pray that you would just continue to make us aware of how we can look to others, how we can give to others, how this is not a season about getting. This is a season about giving. And that we would put ourselves way down the list and trust you to be the kinds of believers that follow you, that give their lives away like you do. In Jesus' name, amen.